Also mute the microphones, and then if people want to speak, they can unmute. Yeah?
Yeah, I'll do that. I'll mute people now. And it's recording there as well.
Okay. So welcome to the Month 10 Investival ETR Briefing. And the briefing that we're presenting today covers the trading period from the 1st of October to the 31st of October. As the briefing document explains, exchange traded receivables are leases, monetary obligations are bills issued under contract for assets, goods and services supplied to investment quality companies, or credit insured invoices from investment grade or IG insurers. So what this means is that an ETR is evidence of a debt owing from one company to another. Typically, these tend to be large companies or banks that are household names, and they owe money to their smaller micro to medium sized suppliers. We call those micro to medium sized supplier businesses originators because they originate the debt obligation transactions that creates the ETR that ultimately are traded on the exchange. So the ETR is evidence of the large company's liability to pay the smaller one, and credit exchange by these ETR at a nominal discount to their face value. In doing so, when the ETR are settled or paid in full, the difference between the face value that is settled and the discounted price that it was purchased at creates a margin. And it's that margin that creates the yield or return for investors. Credit exchange also provides credit facilities to other types of transactions, such as trade finance, asset finance, and others. Essentially, they all work on the same principle that the traded ETR is a business transaction. The exchange provides liquidity and is paid a commission for doing so, much in the same way a bank charges interest. At the end of October, credit exchange held active RSA of 67.65 million, and this is consistent with last month. As explained at the last two briefings, this trebling in value relates to the new accounting policy surrounding our shipping assets. According to those policies, because we buy the assets at roughly an average of roughly 60% loan to value or LTV, the purchase price we pay is one part of the transaction. The remaining 40% ultimately has to be repaid, or is paid by the originator and subsequently has to be repaid. In simple terms, if a ship is worth 5 million and we pay out 3 million and the originator pays the balance of 2 million, the asset shows on our balance sheet at its full value of 5 million. And this is a small but important point. It's also important because when you think about it, what an originator that is called the disponent owner of the vessel, they're risking default. If they default, I should say, on their repayments, they're risking the loss of their deposit, which in this instance is 2 million. So their cash is tied up in the vessel. So I really like these assets for many reasons, apart from the LTV leverage. These assets can be tracked and traced in real time. If you were to visit our office in Dublin, you'll see maps displaying the exact location of each of these vessels at any time. And typically, ships are tracked using the Automatic Identification System, or AIS. This is like a transponder in an airplane. And like the transponder, the captain or master of the ship can turn the AIS off, just as a pilot can turn off the transponder in a plane. However, in a ship, there's also a satellite phone, and this is a much more difficult piece of equipment to switch off, if it can be switched off at all. So the tracking we use tracks the Inmarsat phone, so we really know where the asset is at any moment. And if the AIS is turned off, the satellite phone is still there, and it starts making us ask questions, well, why would you turn the AIS off? So we know if the vessel is operating in a location different to what we've been told, and it acts as an early warning system for breaches of policies we have set with the disponent owner during the course of the purchase of the asset. Currently, this is a manual process, And when the credit machine is released next year, it will automate the process. Whether manual or automated, it's not a perfect system, but it does provide a lot more comfort on where these expensive assets are and what they are doing. Then there's the market itself and the market information available to anyone in shipping, as credit is, and then the regulatory frameworks that all ship owners, operators, managers, and even cargo owners must operate within. The International Maritime Organization, the IMO, that regulates shipping globally and almost every country in the world subscribes to, all adhere to and follow these policies. The legal framework surrounding assets is also international, and as luck would have it, uses British common law, which is the same common law we use in Ireland. So whether you're in Brazil or Borneo, the industry follows common law, and as an Irish-based owner with contracts according to Irish law, we have a strategic advantage over many other countries that we could choose to operate from. There's other aspects of this market that appeal to us, and one is the relatively closed community of ship owners in Greece, who, if you're fortunate enough to be part of that community, it proves to be much easier to get information on who you're dealing with, their background, their experience, and so on. This kind of industry insider information is all freely shared in that community. And as you may notice on the group's main website, www.credit.com, you'll see that in addition to our offices in Birmingham that were opened last year to support trade finance activities, we now have an office in Athens to support our shipping activities. Like any business, knowing where the information is and how to access it is half the battle to ensuring that you're at the front of your game. So trade and shipping are hand and glove industries, and by credit joining the two of these with its finance products and market information has made for a strong combination of good assets with high volumes and strong regulatory infrastructure that seeks to protect everyone in these two combined industries. Returning to the RSA figure of 67.65 million, as you all know, the RSA stands for Revolving Sale Agreement, and a revolving sale agreement is a document or contract between the micro to medium-sized business or the originator and credit exchange. The revolving sale agreement is a commitment by the originator to sell a certain value of ETR to the exchange in any given period, and typically this is for 1 year. I repeat the same example each time, where an originator needs a revolving credit facility of $250,000 in order to run their business. They come to us, much like they would go to a bank, and apply for that credit facility. If we agree to offer them the $250,000 on a revolving basis every 60 days, then they must agree to sell us $250,000 worth of ETR on that 60-day revolving day basis. This is documented in the Revolving Sale Agreement, or RSA, so therefore they're offering to sell us 1.5 million worth of ETR over a 12-month period. And it's that commitment of 1.5 million of ETR annually that appears in the RSA document that I'm quoting on this briefing. As we held 67.65 million of these active RSA contracts at the end of October, apart from the asset finance, the active RSA contracts continued to remain short as trading patterns and speed of settlement and the shortening of the cash-to-cash life cycles increase with more trade and shipping-related transactions in our business. These trade and shipping-related transactions continue to be a core activity on the trade desk. And as at the end of October, credit had purchased a total of 10 vessels, one sold into demolition in August, and liquidated our position at full value. Particular vessel is being replaced as I speak, or actually was replaced yesterday, and the on-off deal with our friends in the UAE also completed recently. So this is good to see as we head towards the year end, with probably a dozen or more serious ship deals under consideration and several trade-specific deals also underway. It would have been nice to complete some of these before the year end, but our optimism wasn't reflected in the transactions on the ground, so they'll probably slip into quarter one of next year, which isn't a bad thing, really. It'll put a strong opening position into that quarter. That, as you may recall from earlier this year, the first quarter was a concern to the board of the company at the time because it was so quiet. Looking to the Baltic Index, being the index for shipping, it came off its significant high of 5672 and rapidly descended during last month, closing out at 3431. That decline continued into this month, and today it stands at 2478, and to my mind is a more healthy position when you consider that when we entered the market last year, it was hovering around the 1500 mark. There's a bounce in there somewhere, but overall, 2021 has been a spectacular year for the dry bulk and box ship markets. We've also seen a steady increase in offshore activity that is encouraging. And like tanker owners, we're all expecting this market to pick up in 2021, but to date it has disappointed. So maybe 2022 is their year. Last month, I spoke about what I call buying into the curve, with the index rocking towards the 6,000 mark. And as I've stated, that price index has eased off looking at the current number. And for what it's worth, it's worth mentioning, I should say, if the price of moving a metric ton of grain or coal moves from, say, $40 a ton to $80 a ton, the only real impact on our trading is the value of the ETR that we end up buying. So it's another reason why we like this market. The increases or decreases in the cost of shipping or the price per ton doesn't really have an effect on our volume, albeit it does affect the value. Looking to the future freight agreement or FFA markets and the Panamax 4TC, these derivative financial futures are another prediction on the cargo transport prices ahead of time. Like the Baltic Index, they're a good indicator of market expectations for the next months, the next quarters, and up to 2 and even 5 years ahead of time. So 2021 has seen the Panamax 4TC FFA rates as high as 36,000 and over. And the rates for October have come off as the industry expected, with prices dropping to the low 20s, with this month and next month showing quarter four at a rough average of about 22,000 per day. Looking further out to 2022 and even into 2023, the rates are 19,000 and then dropping to 13,000. So the predictions are stable to good and will continue to allow for generous profit taking for ship owners in the coming year for sure. And again, like the Baltic Index, FFAs were quoting in and around 11,000 at the start of this year, and this 11 to 12,000 level was where it has spent the best part of last year. It spiked at over 40,000 this year, returning back to 2022,000 mark is a more realistic and consistent with our view that the dry bulk sector has strong legs heading into next year. So overall, this sector should perform well next year, albeit not at the highs recorded towards the end of the summer. Supply and demand in the commodities markets continue to pressure prices upwards. And last month, I mentioned that China currently holds only 9 days of coal reserves and India has only 3 days of reserves. Again, like the Baltic and FFA indexes, coal opened the year at 62,000 a metric ton and ended in October at over $225 a ton. It comes off that price, but is still holding at about $175 per ton today, which is 3 times higher than where it was at the start of the year. Wheat is up almost 40%. Oil is up 55%. And thankfully has come off its $84 a barrel high in October, with a sharp drop of 10% in the past few days. We've spoken about microchip shortage and how this is affecting a vast array of industries, and also the severe impact shipping has had on compounding supply shortages and price increases. And albeit, while all of this is going on throughout this turmoil, it has helped the overall performance of Credit Exchange. Continuing the discussion on coal, I mentioned last month that I liked a particular captain story, and that his new company should be operating the Indonesia-China route in November. But unfortunately, trade desk didn't support my enthusiasm and killed the trade. This is a good demonstration of how new business is dealt with internally. Just because I like this opportunity doesn't mean it gets traded. Trade desk take a more detailed look at these transactions, and where I look at the basics and the high-level data before submitting a new originator to them, they remain impartial and unswayed by me or anyone else on the deal desk. In this particular case, the trade desk couldn't get comfortable with the background details of the company and its principles, and ultimately chose not to proceed. I may not like the outcome, but I trust their judgment and concede that they're probably right in their assessment and their subsequent decision not to trade. Coincidentally, we're looking at another cabotage trade from Calcutta to Tamil Nadu, which is also in coal. This one's a little bit more complicated because it involves our ability to get a standby letter of credit issued on the back of the Tamil Nadu government's contract. The issue here is that currently it's unclear if the government is prepared to sign the contract in the absence of a specific vessel being chartered or purchased. Working with a local Greek private equity partner, we're looking to see how we might be able to make the deal work, but ultimately it all boils down to how strong the relationship is between the potential originator and the government, and whether they can get the contract issued without the vessel being specified. So more on that next month if it goes further. Actually, given how the calendar year falls this year, Andrew and Ruby, I think that we should possibly postpone December's conference call. No doubt there'll be lots of people taking advantage of the way Christmas is this year. And I think we'd probably be better served by holding the next call at the end of January. So without putting you on the spot, what's your thoughts?
I actually agree, because realistically, you're not going to do it on the 20th, the week of the 20th, because people will be started to take the annual leave from then. I don't mean our office, I just mean in general. So you might not be the best for other people. And then before that, then you're doing the week of the 13th, which is 2 weeks from now, which is too close together.
Yeah, okay, fine. Well, grand. With what with the interim audit underway since yesterday and December being our year end, I think it's probably best, the best approach. So let's do that. Okay, so unless there's someone in the audience that thinks we should hold a December briefing, let's meet again at the end of January. And lest I forget, as most of you would know, prior to last year, every December we would hold an investors lunch. We didn't hold one last year due to the lockdown situation. And last month, the board felt that it was too soon to bring this event back. So as it happens, that was a good decision in light of the media coverage of the South Africa variant going around at the moment. So what we will do, as we did last year, is we will spend the money we would normally use for the investor lunch and make a charitable donation instead. Hopefully we can reintroduce the lunch again next year. And on the note of December, may I be the first to wish all of you a peaceful Christmas and a prosperous new year. Returning to the details of the October briefing, it shows that investors redeemed 2.71 million, and this continues to be inconsistent with the withdrawals for the same period in prior years. In effect, the amount of money in versus money out in October was all but equal, meaning we remained flat on the month. Year to date, investors have increased roughly 25%. And overall, that's a good increase, albeit not as much as we'd hoped, given the surge in supply of good quality ETR coming out of the market since before the summer. Last month, I mentioned that we're looking into both leverage in the funds and also the possibility of issuing securities. There's been some progress on this front in the past month, but as yet, nothing worthy of comment during this briefing. There should be some solid news at the January briefing. And as you know, these investors' funds that we're trading in currently and expect to using securities will be a mixture of private companies using ETR as a safe haven for their cash and an even split of pension funds in the form of ARF, PRBs and PRSAs, and indeed private investor savings. The current economic, social, trade and shipping situations in our market remains good for the investable ETR with continued liquidity and stability as we enter the closing weeks of 2021. And this brings the focus of this briefing to the ETR average duration figure of 106 days. This, as you know, we call the credit index. It is the ETR average duration or number of days it takes for an ETR to get settled. There were two spikes in February, March at 121 and again at 111 in August. This one is another negative blip and moves us away from the 90 mark. That's been the average since the end of last year. The credit index is the cash to cash cycle from the day an ETR is issued and purchased in cash and the number of days it takes for the debt to be extinguished or settled and the cash returned. So at 106, it's not going in the right direction, and hopefully we'll see a pullback as we end the year and begin the new one. The last figure in the paragraph, one is of the briefing, shows the trading result of 22.14 in October. August and September have both shown significant increases of more than 125% in these 2 months when compared to trade for the same 2 months in 2020. When you add in October, you'll see that we traded double the amount of ETR between August and the end of last month. In fact, in week 42, this was the best week in the history of the group, with almost 13 million being traded during that single week. When you consider that it took us until the 22nd of March of this year to trade this same value of 13 million worth of ETR, in other words, it took us 11 weeks. This is a particularly significant result to achieve in a single week's trading last month. We're clearly well ahead on outperforming 2020's results. And now, in fact, we're heading towards a year end where a number of trading records will most likely be beaten. With 5 trading weeks until the year end, our budget for the year looked completely unrealistic only a few months ago and is now looking more like a pretty good forecast. So we'll hold back on the optimism a little bit, but expect to show some interesting numbers at the year end, and we'll provide more information on that in January. Below last month's trading figure of 22.14 million is the treasury performance of 19.09. This is consistent with the 50% uplift in the August and September trade. What this tells us is that we spent more than 22 million in October and we collected just over 19 million. As always, Trade Desk and Treasury continue to monitor the trade balance of funds in versus funds out to ensure it remains stable and within the control parameters set down by the credit risk policies that governs the risk and general exchange trading policy. Moving to the center of the document, this is where we list the 10 largest investable ETR holdings and the top 10 rated holdings. These two lists show what companies or organization owed the exchange the largest amounts of money as at the 31st of October. And as usual, you can see the HSE continues to hold our slot as they've done for more than 2 years now, We can also see the repeated appearance of Cork City Council, Atreides, Vodafone, and CBRE. Shepherds, the porta cabin people, returned last month, as did GH Let. Moving to the top 10 rated investably tier on the right hand side, there's the regular reappearance of MediaMath, Paramount 21, and others. These are the highest rated debtors, and as none of these were investment grade or IG, apart from Pfizer, so because they don't have an investment grade rating on the 31st of October, the remainder of this list shows a random selection of organizations, regardless of the amount of their liability, and is simply a selection of the most creditworthy. The pie chart below these two sets of lists continues to demonstrate the significant change in a typically well-diversified spread of ETR across the market. The HSE in Ireland and the NHS in the UK, along with others in the health and community, jumped a further 4% to almost 19%. As with many of this year's briefings since quarter two of last year, this pie chart has a repeated heavy exposure to the wholesale retail market. And throughout this and last year's briefings, we pointed out this is more wholesale and food retail based. As you may well know, organizations like Tesco, Musgraves, and others make regular appearances on our top 10 largest holdings. So looking at the wholesale trade, this continues to perform well and has remained between the 35 to 40% for the past 12 months. It spiked in July and held firm in August, and here it's dropped back significantly to 33%. And hopefully this is an indication that we're turning to the more diversified chart from some 18 to 20 months ago. Food and beverage remained above its normal 7% mark at 8.87, with the business and service sector sticking at almost 9%. Manufacturing bounced back from its 6.6% in August and remained at a more healthy 8%. And again, construction remained off its June high of 14% and repeated last month's figure of 10.5%. There was no other significant changes recorded in any other sector on this graph. The pie chart continues to reference the EU NACE categorization system and will do so for the rest of this year, albeit 5 weeks of it, because we've postponed the delivery of the credit classification and focused all our efforts on releasing the new DealMaker system that went live yesterday. So the DealMaker system is another system that's been in development for the better part of this year and is based on 20 years of my own experience in running and managing not only sales teams, but operations, day-to-day management, and overall business performance. So the DealMaker system was supposed to happen the same week as our last briefing, but there was too many small issues at the time. Anyway, as I said, it's now live, and between now and year end, we'll iron out the small bugs and begin preparing release two in quarter one. With that now in production status, most of the focus will shift back to the credit machine, and the aim is to get that to production status or version one also by the end of quarter one. Returning to the actual performance of the exchange in October 2020 versus October 2021, you can see that we're up more than 66% on last year. And we're now ahead of last year's overall results by 21%, and happy to see that too. I've mentioned the investors' withdrawals and the initial planning of the new investor exchange traded securities product and also the credit index. So to finish out our performance in October, the largest single trade was a shipping trade finance deal of 3.71 million. From the earlier part of this briefing where I mentioned the Panamax 4TC benchmark route, this trade was another Brazil-China grain trade. As explained in the investor brochure and also at other briefings, the average value of an ETR is circa 2,000 euro, but we have traded ETR where the value has been less than a euro. This euro 3.71 million trade used the same future freight agreements or FFA contracts As with prior trades of this nature, our originator hedges any increase in the cargo rate ahead of time using these FFAs. The freight broker uses credit to purchase the FFA derivatives and fix the ship at future dates, and to give them a competitive advantage in what continues to be a booming, albeit slightly calming down, market. We may have prioritized the delivery of the dealmaker system, but the rollout of the credit machine trading system remains very important because it will enable us to trade multiple FFA derivative deals and match the FFA trades to the physical shipping trades more seamlessly. Finally, moving to the trend section of the October briefing, you can see that the investor's yield or buy price started at 2.089 and climbed steadily throughout the month to 2.119%. Since September, Trade Desk decided to push this yield up artificially to 3% and hold it at that rate. We've done that now for the past 3 months, and we'll finish the year out at that propped up rate as we head into 2022. The proposed exchange traded securities may affect the price in 2022, but it probably won't happen until quarter two, is my guess. When you combine this rate of 3% with the negative yield of 1% on bank deposits, the investors are getting a yield that is now over 4% better by buying exchange traded receivables. So as you all know, the rate changes daily and can be checked on the investable.com website homepage. To finish this briefing, you'll see a repeat of the active RSA, or revolving sale agreement, of €67.65 million. And that concludes this month's briefing for October 2021. Once again, may extend our gratitude to all of you on this call, and indeed those who couldn't attend today, for your continued support throughout the year. And on behalf of everyone in Credit Group, may I also extend our best wishes to you, to your families, your friends and colleagues, that you all have a peaceful Christmas and indeed a prosperous new year. Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick. Many happy returns.
You too, Patrick, and everyone in the team. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thomas, thank you. Noel, thank you very much. And thank you for attending.
All right. Okay, lads. Take care.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
So, how do we do? Okay.
Yeah, the talk sounded good. I really liked that part about, obviously, the results. You know, you were saying you did 13. We did 13 million last week alone. That's brilliant. I'm actually going to take that and put that into the presentation, because there's a part in the presentation where it goes and I talk about how it said it took us 4 years to do 100 million. In the next 4 years, we've done just over 650 million. So we're on just over 750. And you can see now we just did 13 in a week. So that alone, I'm actually going to steal. So I found, I think, in just being able to show those type of results.
Sure.
It just shows that when you and I were sitting...
We broke another one in week 46. So anyway, very good. Okay, well, if it works, it works.
I just think it's especially when you were talking about those briefings back, I can remember them from January, March, February, and where you were saying it's coming, it's going to be, we just have to wait for the floodgates to open. And it was like 3 or 4 months you were saying it's coming, and then, as you said, you were proven right. So
okay, good. All right, well, thank you, Ruby, because I know you're the person who does most of the work, if I'm not mistaken, on making sure people attend this thing. And thanks very much also, Andrew, for the support.
Yeah, no problem.
No problem.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Thanks. All right. Thanks, Patrick.
Thank you. Bye-bye.